You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by Hearst Ranch. www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Lorenzo Reginieri. We're sponsored by Hearst Ranch and engineered by the lovely and talented EJ Dukoski. Today on the program, we have Bridget Brennan, author of the recently published Why She Buys, The New Strategy for Reaching the World's Most Powerful Consumers, published by Crown Business, a division of Random House. Welcome, Bridget.
Oh, great to be here, Lorenzo.
So before we begin, I want to read an excerpt from your book, just to orient the listeners.
Okay, super.
So you write in your book, across the world, women are the customers who buy virtually everything there is to be sold. Women make the purchase or are the key influencers in about 80% of all consumer product sales in the United States alone. But who markets and sells products to these women? The answer, overwhelmingly, is men, who occupy 85% of all Fortune 500 corporate officer positions, the majority of chief marketing officer positions and corporate executive sales management jobs, and over 90% of the top creative director roles at major advertising agencies. So this creates somewhat of a disparity here between who is reaching out to the consumer and their different tastes and different sensibilities, and this is what you seem to address in your book. So just to introduce you to our listeners, why don't you tell us a little bit about your academic and professional history?
Well, sure. Well, I run a company called Female Factor, and we're a strategic consultancy that helps companies increase their success with women consumers. So I lead sales trainings and help develop marketing strategies and have spent the last two decades working in marketing and public relations agencies with major clients like Whirlpool Corporation, Johnson & Johnson, Pizza Hut, Colgate-Palmolive, United Airlines, and a host of others. And I've served as an instructor at Northwestern University's graduate program in marketing communications, which falls under the Medill School of Journalism there, and am a guest lecturer there on a relatively frequent basis at the Kellogg School of Management.
Okay. Well, you have an infectious radio personality, so I don't doubt that you're a good teacher. So let's shift to your book. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of your thesis here. What makes women the most powerful consumers? What are the demographic changes affecting female consumerism?
Sure. Well, you know, women, you said, Lorenzo, you read the excerpt that women buy or influence the sale of 80% of all consumer goods. And contrary to popular stereotype, it's not because women are shopaholics, obsessed with, like, the latest shoe sale, as we see so often depicted on TV.
Sure.
It's because in our society, women have the role within their families of buying products for just about everybody. So if a woman is married and if she has kids, if her husband needs a new pair of socks, well, chances are she's buying them. If the 8-year-old down the street is having a birthday party that her child has been invited to, she's the one buying that present. She's the one wrapping it. She's the one sticking the bow on top of it. Mm-hmm. She's buying products for her elderly parents. Women buy most of the office products in corporate America because women hold most of the administrative positions. So when you add it all up,
this confluence of factors.
Yes, exactly. Even if they're not the end user of a particular product like men's underwear or socks, women are the ones out there buying on behalf of everybody in their lives.
Interesting. Interesting. And are there divorce statistics and other statistics that play into these changing demographics? I read somewhere.
Yes. You know, there are some interesting factors at play. One of the biggest is that since 1970, almost all the income growth in the United States has come from women joining the labor force. And one easy way to sort of picture the way we were and picture the way we are, especially for any of your listeners who are, say, over 35, you know, if you think about before women joined the workforce, the American household looked kind of like the Brady Bunch. So, you know, remember the Brady Bunch, you know, there were three kids per bedroom. Uh-huh. Each of the bedrooms had a bunk bed and then a single bed. They shared a bathroom. There was one TV in the house. There was one car. The mom didn't work. And that was sort of the archetypal depiction of American life.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since The Brady Bunch. What's happened is women have gone out into the workforce in such droves that now over 70% of all women with young children work. So those second paychecks have accounted for the mass luxury that we've become used to as a society. So now we live in a world where it's not unusual for a kid to have their own TV in their bedroom.
Sure.
Or their own computer, or everybody in the house has their own cell phone, and there's three cars in the driveway. All of that increase in our standard of living has been driven by women's incomes.
Very interesting. It's actually holds to reason.
It does when you stop and think about it. Like, what's different between now and pre-1970? Oh, it's one half of the population went out and joined the workforce.
Sure, sure. So this book is billed as the new strategy for reaching female consumers. What is this sort of luminary theory that you have? What's this central strategy that you're advancing in this book?
Well, the central strategy is that gender is the most powerful determinant of how a person views the world and everything in it. So no matter how much market research is done now, and there's a lot of, you know, really sophisticated market research done now. Like, Lorenzo, I'm sure there's companies out there who know what zip code you live in, what your income level is, what your age bracket is, what your race is, because companies are very sophisticated in knowing all of those things about us. But they overlook the most powerful and, you might say, obvious statistic of all, which is, are you a man or a woman? And if so, how does that change the way you react to whatever we're trying to sell you?
So even
because
more than ethnicity,
men and women's bodies are totally different. We're, you know, hormones drive behavior, and we are each walking around with two different sets of hormone levels.
Sure. So even more than ethnicity, race, religion, or age, gender is really the differentiating factor in a person's most basic human decisions.
Exactly. The way you react to everything is, first of all, as a man or a woman. The visual stimuli, what you find exciting, what you find interesting.
Attractive.
Yes, everything. It's through that filter of your gender.
No, that stands to reason, for sure.
But the reason, Lorenzo, that I wrote the book is because this is not really taught anywhere in business schools. And if the subject of gender is taught, when it's taught at the undergraduate level, it's typically taught in the context of the history of the women's liberation movement, or more the socio-political aspects of gender, not gender as it relates to the world of commerce and the global consumer economy, and how does a male-dominated business world respond to the needs of an overwhelmingly female consumer base.
Now, do you think that this issue is a bit underreported because people are squeamish about even addressing the topic because they may think of it as sexist or somehow?
Lorenzo, you hit the nail on the head. There is so much political correctness swirling around this issue, or even the very word gender makes people cringe just a little bit. There are a few reasons for this. One is, because of us women, for the past 30 years, we women have been saying, hey, don't treat us any differently. Don't pay us any differently. We are equal to men. And so we women have been hesitant in our quest for equality to talk about the differences that we all recognize in our personal lives. We're hesitant to talk about them at work, and men are hesitant, too, because they don't want to say the wrong thing and be accused of being politically incorrect or get in trouble somehow for saying the wrong thing.
That makes sense.
And the brain differences between men and women are relatively newly discovered in the world of medicine. It's only been in the last 20 years or so with the development of MRI machines that we can study live brains. Instead of just cadavers, and for most of medical history, the generic patient in any kind of study was always male, because men are easier to study because women have hormone fluctuations, they have their periods, they go through menopause, they get pregnant, so all these things can, quote-unquote, screw up a long-term study. So men were typically the long-term study generic patient in all kinds of science, including the science of the brain.
Perhaps women's behavior is more mercurial.
Well, you know, scientists will tell you that men and women do have very different brains, and what would be perceived as mercurial by a man would be perceived as totally normal by a woman.
Another pig-headed male radio personality.
Oh, you're not at all. You're very enlightened because you're talking and exploring this topic, and I can tell you totally understand it.
So you touched upon the brain differences between men and women. What are some of these differences, and what may cause important female customers to notice things about products or marketing campaigns or sales environments that men may overlook? What's going on a cerebral level?
Well, women tend to notice that details that men don't. And you notice this in women's conversation.
Oh,
right? Women will get to a level of detail in conversation that men will just find staggering. Like, how could you even notice that the person that we visited tonight had a new picture on their wall? I never even would have noticed that. Women notice details. And so they notice details when it comes to products. For instance, women tend to notice very practical aspects of product design. Like a man and a woman could be shopping. Let's say they're at Best Buy. They're looking at a new flat screen TV. The man might be looking at all the amazing bells and whistles of what this TV is capable of doing. Like maybe he can watch four shows at the very same time and do all sorts of intricate programming. And the woman is looking at the very practical things like, is this TV so huge it's gonna dominate the entire living room wall and screw up the look of the living room? Where's the remote control? Is it simple enough to use that when we have a babysitter come in, we don't have to spend 30 minutes showing her how to work the remote control? You know, if a woman might look at a cell phone and see, can I find this at the bottom of my purse? Is it too heavy for my purse? The women tend to look at the same products through a different
completely
pair of eyes than men do.
Interesting. So they're almost hardwired to think of the imperative of survival and practicality first.
Right, because remember that women are buying on behalf of everybody else in their lives.
So
they're always thinking about all these other people. Like, can my kid use this remote really easily if I'm not home?
These are fascinating insights, by the way.
But, you know, when you say them, they just, I bet you're sitting there nodding your head thinking, oh, yeah, it's kind of obvious. It's just that nobody actually talks about this in business, but we all sort of know it intuitively from our personal lives. Because men and women, we all grow up together as brothers and sisters, sons and daughters and friends. But it's just something that is almost completely overlooked in business, which is kind of shocking, and yet it's all obvious when you explain it.
Certainly, certainly. So what are marketers doing wrong, and how can they appeal more to women?
Well, for one thing, there's a lot of companies that are still hitting women with pink sledgehammers, and what I mean by that is, you know, marketers and companies just assuming that if you have a pink offering, it's catnip for women, and they'll all come running. When,
it's
as we just discussed,
in and of itself.
Right. Women do love color, of course, but you know what? So do men. Look at Apple, how they're so successful with color.
Sure.
I mean, if I have this theory that Apple is the most sort of surreptitiously feminine company out there, but nobody thinks of them as feminine.
Very
but,
dainty and elegant products.
Right. I mean, you don't need a manual. Women usually don't like to wade through a technical manual. They don't even come with manuals. They're curvy. They're colorful. If you looked at a piece of paper describing Apple's products, you would think that they would be feminine. But the interesting thing about when you design for women is you usually end up making the men happy, too, because you give them men things that they didn't think to ask for but are quite happy to get once they've got them. But there's so many funny oversights. For instance, you know, if you're a woman and you buy a BlackBerry or you get one issued to you through work, chances are it comes with a holster for your belt that is designed for a guy and you're never going to wear it.
Sure.
But they all come with one, you know.
Sure.
Because probably the engineers are guys. So, you know, it's just there's a million of these little things that are designed from a male point of view that don't really work with women.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Certainly.
Women also tend to notice ambiance and be very conscious. They're very conscious of how they're treated in the sales environment. And so I think that if companies, anybody who's in business who depends on women consumers who might be listening to this show, if there was only one thing that you could do starting tomorrow to increase your popularity with women, it would be to increase your level of customer service.
Uh-huh.
The bar is so low in almost every industry, and it's just getting worse, that any company that's smart enough to just increase their level of customer service will find an appreciative audience in women.
Certainly.
Women are highly attuned to how they're treated by salespeople in companies.
I don't doubt that. So there's an anecdote in your book about a shopping experience you had, which is actually related to being treated not so kindly by someone in a position of service. There's an anecdote about a shopping experience you had hunting for a car. And you wanted to settle on a BMW, but you didn't for a specific reason. And do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, you know, my husband and I had decided to trade in two sort of medium cars for one hot car, the BMW 540i. And so we had been looking online for the exact model that we wanted and found it and went to get it. And so, you know, we had done a lot of the pre-research and the sale was almost a done deal before we even walked in there. But the way I was treated by the sales rep made us walk out of there empty-handed, which just goes to show the influence of women in big-ticket purchases. If a woman has a bad experience, even if she's with her husband, both of them will walk out empty-handed usually. So what happened was this car had really lame cup holders. They looked like teeny-weeny little plastic crab claws. When you press the button, these little crab claws kind of came out. I don't know if you've ever seen
any
like that.
I know exactly the kind of cup holder you're talking about. I hate it.
I know! They're so impractical. So the rest of this car is, like, beautifully engineered, except for this one glaring flaw of the cup holders. And so I was afraid to bring it up because over 90% of all car salespeople are men. And that can be intimidating if you're a woman because you kind of feel like they're looking at you like, oh, here comes a woman who doesn't know anything.
Right.
And so I felt really nervous about bringing up my issue with, you know, the ultimate driving machine. Who am I to question this magnificent Bavarian engineering? Because what am I? I'm a woman trying to buy a car. But I do drink this giant thermos of coffee every single morning. It is my biggest vice, and I actually drink two or three of them, not just one. I can admit to you.
So I said, hey, what's up
with the cup holders? They don't look like they could handle like a sippy cup, let alone my giant thermos.
Sure.
And the guy said to me, literally, first of all, he shot a look at my husband like, you poor thing, you're married to this woman who doesn't understand this car. And he said, well, Europeans don't eat or drink in their cars. And I said, well, hello, I'm American. I'm buying this car in Chicago. I have a big old thing, a Starbucks in my car every morning. And he said, he just shot me this disdainful look and said, well, then why don't you just stick your thermos between your legs? Now, aside from the fact that if you're wearing a skirt, that is a completely impractical suggestion,
sure.
It was just rude. And so my husband and I walked out because I was so disgusted about how we were treated. And I went on epinions.com that night, and I found out that there were all these people who had the same issue with this cup holder, which made me feel so validated. And they were all recommending aftermarket solutions. It turns out there's a cottage industry in creating custom cup holders for European cars because Americans like their drinks in their cars. So we bought the car somewhere else, and we went up to the automotive aftermarket and found a cup holder on the web, which I'm sure that salesperson probably was aware of. And if he had just taken my issue seriously, he would have gone home with a lot more money in his commission check.
Sure. Sure. Well, we have to wrap up, Bridget, but I have one last question for you looking forward. Do you think companies and advertisers will begin to craft messages more tailored to the female sensibility? Or do you think this trend towards male-centric advertising will continue? And ultimately, will women continue to control the lion's share of purchases, and will actually their percentage of the market even perhaps increase?
Yes, you know, I'll take the last part of your question first, Lorenzo. When you look at the educational trends as being a predictor of people's jobs and incomes in the future, women have been dominating college degrees and college graduates in the U.S. for more than 20 years. And it's the statistics are huge. Women are really outnumbering men graduating from college, which means that for the next 20 to 25 years, their earning power and therefore spending power should continue to be great. And the second thing is, I see companies slowly responding to the power of the women consumer. For instance, I went to the Blog Her conference this weekend. It was a 3-day event where 2,000 women bloggers came, and all these big companies were trying to reach these women because they know women talk online about the products that they buy, and All of corporate America was out there trying to woo these women, which was really interesting to see. And what I anticipate the end result being is I anticipate in a few years we're going to start seeing better design in everything from trash cans to tool belts. Uh-huh. I anticipate more stylish clothing options for the overweight because, hello, most women in this country are overweight. I mean, all of America is overweight, but the fashion industry hasn't really responded yet.
No, has not acknowledged that.
I envision more family-friendly offerings in everything from health clubs to golf courses. Golf has been flat for the past several years. The sport is not growing. They're trying to get more women involved to grow the sport. Mm-hmm. So I think that companies are just now getting it, and we're going to see a lot of interesting things happen that are going to make all their male customers happy, too.
Well, that's certainly fascinating. You seem to have a wealth of knowledge about this topic. You were a really great guest, great radio personality. If anyone wants to get your book, they can find it at any Barnes & Noble or Amazon.
That's right, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon, independent bookshops. And if you want to learn more, please check out my website, thefemalefactor.com.
That's right. It's Why She Buys, the new strategy for reaching the world's most powerful consumers. Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you, Lorenzo.
Take care.
Bye-bye.